Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much for spending some time. And Happy New Year. This is the first show of 2025. Thanks for being with me on this notable date. And I'm very happy to say that we have a very special live in-studio guest this evening. It is WFMU station manager Ken Friedman. Ken, are you there?
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ken. Welcome back to the show. You've been on early in the year as an annual tradition for I don't know how many years now, and it's always a pleasure and privilege to have you on the show with me, and so welcome.
Yeah, happy to be kicking off the year with you once again. It's a great tradition.
It is, and every time we do this, Ken, we come up with some sort of a theme that we find interesting, that we think the listeners are going to find interesting, and kind of gives a look ahead to where technology may be developing over the next year. And I think we have accomplished that in our theme for this year, because we have noticed something over the last couple of weeks that is brewing, a witch's brew of bad ideas that is being normalized, and that is AI-generated audio. And this is part of this AI-generated everything that's coming at us from a number of different angles. Just to give one simple example, Ken, before we get to the audio, I put on the playlist an image from UCLA. There's a new course, or there's a course at UCLA that's trying something new. It's a comparative literature course that has proudly announced, the professor has proudly announced, that all of the class materials are AI generated, meaning the lesson plan, the professor's notes, the TAs, teaching guides, and amazingly, the textbook for this class, this comparative lit class, is AI generated. And there's a photo of it, where there's a representation of the cover of this AI generated textbook on the playlist, and people can see it's called History and Fiction: Survey of Literature from the Middle Ages to the 17th Century. Okay.
And it's got fake Latin all over it.
So
the human professors who are most likely well educated in their field are going to be subservient to AI generated class materials.
That's the thing. The fake Latin, by the way, it says front and center on this book cover, of neriacular Latin to an evolution of Nance Langa sausages. And that's the official course material of UCLA.
Well, it's on a textbook, so it must be real.
And I think I bring this up because this is a good frame, I think, for the audio we're going to be playing as we go through this. I want listeners to consider what's being normalized. What are we being sold that we're being asked to accept by Silicon Valley? That this is the new normal that you should be perfectly comfortable with and satisfied with. It tends to be something that is a great decrease in quality. Another question is, who is losing authority or who's losing agency in this? And as you say, Ken, the professor then abdicates to the AI that has written all the course materials.
Well, it's just more AI clickbait. You know, it seems like the AI mania that we're still in the midst of it just gets used again and again just to generate attention. You know, we're using AI for this, we're using AI for your toilet, you know, we're using AI for your sneaker laces now. You know, I just am praying that 2025 is the year that this mania is finally going to be broken or replaced with something else. I mean, we've gone through so many tech manias recently, you know, cryptocurrency and NFTs and so many other things. But man, this AI mania, we've been in the midst of it for what, a year and a half already?
Yeah, yes. Ever since GPT, I think it was 3.5 came out. When was that? About a year and a half ago or something?
Yeah.
Or
what year? It's really, and a half, really years? Lasting a long time.
It is, and you're right that it's where we go from mania to mania. It was NFTs, then it was anything crypto and blockchain related, and then that was just shunted aside when people realized how much fraud was rampant on those systems, and now it's AI. And in my mind, I just see this giant pot of money just being transferred from one set of ideas to another. And it's the same. Can people say that things have improved greatly by this pot of however many hundreds of billions of dollars being applied to this versus that mania? It's hard to argue in favor of this way of allocating capital, but anyway.
Well, I mean, as you've pointed out on the show here, AI does have a couple of use cases here and there that are worthwhile, especially in the medical field. It does make sense to use AI for certain things.
Sure.
And we've used it here at FMU actually for coding. Non-coders can actually now code simple databases with the help of AI. So it does have a couple of useful things. But what's really so objectionable is that it's being used, as an application for everything.
That's right.
And I've been encountering AI music for my Wednesday morning music show for quite some time now and have been grappling with the artistic merits of it as well as the ethical merits of whether I should play AI or not. And fortunately, most of the stuff that I encounter is so filthy there's no question.
I can't play it on the radio, right?
I can't play it anyway.
Right.
There's a couple of different kinds of AI music out there, and one of them is to take some old genre like doo-wop or rockabilly or soul,
yeah,
or swing or big band, and just write an absolutely disgusting, filthy song that sounds like, you know.
Well, maybe
it sounds like it's Anita O'Day, only she's talking about, you know, your bunghole or something like that.
let's play an example that we can play on the radio. This is one that you uncovered that is in the country and Western format, both kinds of music. What should we give them the title of the music, or should it just be revealed to them when
we play
it?
Yeah, it'll be revealed.
Okay.
This is one of the only, I just described a certain genre that I have encountered, the filthy genre remake, let's call it. Most of them I cannot play. They just have so many curses that I can't play them. But this one only had two curses. So yeah.
We took them out.
Yeah, this one we can play.
Okay, here it is.
I don't have much compassion, and I have a secret passion, but I'm not really so proud of it. It sometimes makes me a little sick. I don't know I'm like this. I wish that I was normal, but for the love of God, I cannot stop pushing people over in the supermarket. I just love pushing people over. It really makes my heart sing. Young or old, don't matter, you'll be on your ass with me. I'll push you into milk or cheese or bread or ham or eggs or butter or dog food or canned fruit or broccoli or shoes or garden supplies or anything I don't really mind. I just love pushing people over so they fall and bonk their heads. I love pushing people over into cartons of milk. I see it all, people fall into chest freezers. Bonk on the head.
Bonk, bonk, bonk.
Bonk, bonk on the head.
Bonk, bonk, bonk.
I just really love pushing people over.
And that was I Love Pushing People Over in the Supermarket by Jebediah Creek. They're good find there, Ken.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could play the others because, you know, it is funny. And I think one of AI's use cases is that it can be a really fun toy. You know, it can be a fun toy for graphic art, for music, for text.
It can be fun. For utility, I think what you said before about people, non-coders being able to code, you use the word helping. When AI is helping a human get a task done, that's okay. The problem is when the AI then takes over or people completely abdicate their role and ask the AI to take over. So if it's purely in a helpful capacity or it's just for giggles, I mean, it's pretty benign.
Well, I think most of what I've encountered and probably what we're going to play tonight is a result of what's called prompt engineering,
yeah,
where a human being is giving an AI generation program prompts. And then often, you know, there's a first take and then they say, make the voice more twangy.
Right.
Have more guitar, you know, make the bass more prominent. So you keep tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. Well, and I think that was an example of that. That wasn't something that was spontaneously created by some music AI program. That definitely had human human prompting.
But we do have a couple of examples, and we're not going to play the whole song because these are not pleasant to listen to. But these are ones that did not have a lot of apparently human interaction. This is one that is called Led Zeppelin II, if it was recorded in the 50s.
Baby, I'm not fooling. I'm gonna send you back to schoolin'. Way down inside, honey, you need it. I'm gonna give you my love. I'm gonna give you my love. I want a whole lot of love. I want a whole lot of love. I want a whole lot of love. I want a whole.
Okay, I can't listen to any more of that. That's
I really hate that.
There's no creativity at all. All they did was take the lyrics and say, put these lyrics into a 50s type rockabilly song or whatever.
Right. It has nothing to do with Led Zeppelin's music. It has nothing to do with the melody of Whole Lotta Love.
Didn't play with the lyrics, didn't do anything clever. I'm just going to do one more just to get this out of the way. This is called Queen Play the Beatles.
That's really bad. That doesn't sound anything like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
I mean, the guitars sound like Brian May
a little bit. Yeah, that's really lazy. So there's
a lot of that. There's a lot of that out there.
So when you go on YouTube, Ken, can you describe what are you finding? Because I'm guessing that there's much more of this kind of slop than there is supermarket kind of slop. It was somewhat clever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking for this, by the way. This stuff keeps creeping into my it keeps creeping into my YouTube feed. When I play a lot of my Wednesday morning show from stuff that I find on YouTube. And like I said, there's a couple of different genres of AI music. It's mostly novelty music of the types that we've just been playing, of, filthy genre-specific songs. Or things like, country western version of Led Zeppelin or Queen playing the Beatles
right.
and stuff like that. And I can't stand the last two things that you played.
But see, the slop like this, there is a reason why it's proliferating and multiplying everywhere, and that's because some people have figured out how to make money off of slop. If they can create content that gains just a little bit of attention, they can monetize that with ads or whatever.
Right.
And the cost of production is zero. One person who has discovered the money-making potential of outright slop is Mark Zuckerberg. He is continually announcing new strategies and launches on Facebook that are increasing the amount of slop that's delivered to Facebook users via the feed. Most recently, he launched these fake AI-generated personas or avatars that people can chat with. And I guess it's because so many people have left Facebook. There are fewer people who are actually using Facebook as human beings. Zuck figured he would need to fill the gap with slop provided by AI characters. And it's just, it's disappointing to see the internet filled up with slop like this, but it makes money for some very rich people.
You know what? I was just thinking that I think a lot of the AI characters that you encounter in customer service and chatbots, they probably sound more like real people than a lot of the times the real people who are performing customer service sound like. I've had this problem lately where I'm talking to, I think, a real human being doing customer service for me for some corporation.
Right.
And because they're reading scripted lines, you know, and they're being monitored by their superiors, and they're so plastic sounding, I have to stop and say, wait, are you a human being?
Right.
And they're often taken aback by that question. And of course, they'll always say, oh, yes, of course I am. A lot of times I'm not even sure if I believe them.
There's this podcast that came out within the last year called Shell Game. Did you hear about this?
No.
This journalist, Evan Ratliff, made a AI version of himself and had it call customer service lines and also converse with inbound spam calls that he was getting.
Ah.
And people had a variety of reactions, but one of the scammers actually asked his AI avatar, are you real? Are you a real person? Because there's an uncanny valley to it. It kind of sounds real, but then when you broaden the conversation, the illusion dissipates.
Yeah, there are some questions. I can't think of any off the top of my head now, but there are some questions that you can ask a human being to discern whether they truly are a human being or not. It's a new problem.
Now, going back to music, one of these arenas of slop is Spotify.
Yes.
And just like how Zuckerberg is monetizing the slop on Facebook, Spotify is figuring out how to deliver extruded musical product to its subscribers without having to pay actual musicians or actual bands very much for their actual human-made music. So there's this article in Harper's written by Liz Pelly called The Ghosts and the Machine, and some of us here at the station have been talking about this, that Liz found in her research that there are musicians that are hired by distributors to create a kind of music, this anonymous, bland, jazz-ish musical product. They do a bunch of songs in one take, and then it goes up on Spotify playlists. And the musical slot then gets millions and millions of listens.
So it's actually music for hire. So it's content for hire. So the creators don't have to pay copyright, or they don't have to pay normal licensing fees,
right?
Because they paid to have it created, and it's just kind of used as filler.
Right. And that's Spotify's model. Increasingly, it sounds like Spotify wants to normalize people just having Spotify on in the background and not paying too much attention to it, because that works really well for Spotify. Once people get used to paying Spotify for low-quality musical product, then they can just monetize the slop. And as Liz Pelly points out, the next logical step would be to jump into AI-generated musical product. onto the playlist.
There's got to be a ton of AI music on Spotify already. I haven't encountered any, but I'm not a huge Spotify user.
Yeah.
But there must be a ton of AI music on Spotify. When is Liz Pelly going to be on the show?
Well, she's coming on Tectonic soon. Her book is out, and I'm going to be, once I have read it.
What's it called? Ghosts in the Machine?
I think that's right. I think that's right. It's called Mood Machine, The Rise of Spotify and the Costs of the Perfect Playlist. And the Harper's piece is an excerpt from Mood Machine. So once I've read Mood Machine, Liz is going to be on the show and we're going to talk about what Spotify is doing. But it's just interesting to see Spotify and Facebook apparently following similar paths. There was a piece in N Plus One a few days ago that made the same point about Netflix, that Netflix is cramming all kinds of just low quality video extruded movie and TV content onto its feed in order that people will get used to paying the Netflix monthly subscription without having to pay too much attention. They can just have Netflix on in the background. And one detail from the N Plus One piece I found amusing is that apparently in some of the Netflix movies, the scripts are now written for characters to reintroduce themselves and their important plot points so that if someone has been doing laundry in the other room and they come back in for Netflix in the background, then the character will helpfully re-explain the entire plot to them.
Hi, it's Murray. Remember, I live next door.
Exactly.
I'm right. Sleeping with your sister.
Yeah. That's right. So, there's a lot of slop out there, and there are companies that have figured out how to monetize this, which makes it a pretty grim future look at what may happen to our media environment. However, Ken, I also wanted to point out that you and I have been talking about some AI-generated or content, or maybe not fully AI-generated, but AI played a part in it, that you like, that you have enjoyed. And I want to play, do you want to say anything about this psychedelic Kung Fu Funk piece? How did you find, because this is something that you like, right?
Well, yeah, I just came across this browsing around YouTube looking for stuff for my show, and I listened to it and liked it, and only after I realized that I liked it and had saved it to one of my playlists did I notice that it was openly acknowledging that it was AI music.
Interesting. All right, let's play a little bit of psychedelic Kung Fu Funk, Journey from the East, and then we'll talk about it.
That's enough of that. It actually sounds really boring to me now. But when I heard it, I thought like, oh, this is just, good background music.
Well, you know, for AI generated, if you compare that to what we were just playing, the Queen Beatles thing, this is a lot less offensive to the ear. Put it that
way. Yeah. And I when I heard it, I just thought like, oh, this will be a good thing to talk over. Right. But after realizing that this is AI, I sort of made the decision for myself that I'm going to be very, very discriminating about what AI music I play on the air. I'm really going to do my best to avoid it. And especially for something like that, that doesn't bring anything new to the table whatsoever, that I could easily find something real played by human musicians that fulfills the same need or creates the same mood.
Now, what happens if by the end of the year you have actual musicians out there, or DJs, whoever, who are creating tracks that they acknowledged they used AI for, but they still had some creative input as well. It's kind of a blend. What then?
I don't know what then. I mean, I'm thinking back to like the breakcore days, you know, a genre that existed, you know, or that was hot 10 or 15 years ago of hyper-sampled electronic beat music, and the fact that, you know, it was all produced ahead of time with really, really small samples, so small that you can't even recognize the original source material. And people would come on stage and just press a button on the laptop and then just dance around on stage, and they would fill stadiums.
Really?
You know, and that wasn't AI. That was
right.
That was sort of human-created music.
Well, it reminds me of Girl Talk. I mean, he was...
Right.
That was a similar thing, right? It was just his songs were just...
Yeah, mashups. Yeah.
And that's what he would do, basically, is just bring the laptop and play mashups of other people's music, and he would fill stadiums, too, for a
yeah,
while.
Yeah, So what the scenario that you just described, I think it will be fine. I mean, I think people will go out to see that. People... what's the name of the hologram music that Matt Warwick is so into?
Yeah.
You know, we're in Japan and other parts of the world. There are hologram performers that don't exist in the real world.
Yeah. Hatsune Miku.
Yeah, Hatsune Miku is the big one.
Yeah.
She fills stadiums. Yeah. It fills stadiums.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, part of that, as I understand, is that you can send in a dance routine for Hatsune Miku, and if yours is chosen, it will actually perform that dance routine on stage live. So there's a little bit of audience contribution or interaction, I guess, in that way.
Yeah, a little bit.
I want to shift now from music to talk, because there is a new entrant in AI-generated talk as opposed to AI-generated music. And this is a new product from Google that a number of people have asked me about, and I've been meaning to say something about. And so this is the perfect episode. Ken and I can say something about this new service from Google. It's called Notebook LM. It's all one word, Notebook LM. And what this does is it's actually a number of things. You can get to it on the Google site. It's free for the moment. It asks you to upload some source material. So this could be a PDF. It could be an MP3 file. It could be a, I don't know what other. So any kind of written or audio file. And there can be multiple sources. And the this AI model will then summarize what's in that source or what's in those sources if you put in multiple sources. But it doesn't stop there, because it'll give you an on-screen summary, and that's not too different from what ChatGPT does. You can give ChatGPT some material and it can give you a summary. That's something that some large language models are promising that they're very good at. However, what Google's Notebook LM does that I haven't seen before is that they will, with the click of a button, it will generate a podcast of two human-sounding voices, one male, one female, discussing the material that you just uploaded. And
in the most slimy, NPR chirpy way you can imagine.
All right, so...
I was so disturbed by this. Are you going to play the WFMU one?
Not yet. I don't want to start there. We're going to work up to that.
Okay.
I just want to give... We're not going to play the whole thing. These go on for many minutes, but I just want to play just a few sentences so people can hear the voices. So what I did is I found... I wanted to get something pretty obscure. So I found the abstract of a new physics research paper on blue semiconductor lasers. And it's... I have the paper right over here, and the title of the paper is, this is news about the paper. Team creates world's first tunable wavelength blue semiconductor laser. Pretty obscure stuff. I don't know a whole lot about blue semiconductor lasers, but I thought, let's see what Notebook LM can do in trying to summarize this fairly obscure topic. And this is what it came back with.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to this deep dive, where we get to explore something seriously cool. We're talking lasers today, and not just any lasers, tunable blue semiconductor lasers.
Yeah, no, it sounds kind of technical. But stick with me, because these things have the potential to revolutionize a bunch of things, from how we sterilize everyday objects to even space exploration.
It all starts with a team of researchers at Osaka University. They've achieved something pretty incredible, creating the world's first tunable blue semiconductor laser.
And that's a big deal, right? Because I'm seeing this phrase, far ultraviolet light technology, pop up a lot in the research. Like, what's the connection there?
Well, think of it this way. Far UV light is like a superhero when it comes to killing bacteria and viruses. But the problem is that creating it usually involves these giant, expensive lasers that you wouldn't exactly find in your kitchen. This new laser, though, changes the game. It's super compact and uses a specific blue wavelength to efficiently generate that germ-killing far UV light. Okay, so that explains why this is so exciting for things like sterilization, right? But I'm still a bit stuck on one thing, this periodically slotted structure that the source keeps mentioning. What exactly does that even mean?
Imagine you have a perfectly smooth surface.
Okay. Oh.
Well.
It's so awful.
I would say it's an impressive technical achievement.
Yes, it is.
I have a lot of problems with this, with Google and this, what the service may end up doing. But just looking at that summarization, that's impressive that they could get two AI voices to give a rather accessible intro to blue lasers in semiconductor manufacture.
What impresses me about it is that it sounds so human.
Right.
It sounds way more human than your typical human who does customer service for a for a corporation.
That's right. I just
except it's based completely on NPR. The guy sounds like Jad Abumrad. The woman sounds like Sarah Marshall, really huge podcaster.
Yeah.
And they're just so chirpy and upbeat and hip.
Everything is upbeat. Yeah. They've definitely been programmed to have the us and the like and the you know and the 100%.
And totally.
Here's the deal. I wanted to have some fun with this, so I thought let's not do something super obscure. Let's do something that is hard, potentially to summarize. And so I went and I got Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason. This classic of philosophy. It's free on Project Gutenberg. I turned it into a PDF. The entire book. It's like 350 pages, single spaced. I put it in a notebook LM, and I asked them to summarize Critique of Pure Reason.
All right, everyone, get ready, because today we are going deep on, Kant's Critique of Pure Reason.
Oh, boy.
I know. It's one of those works that everyone knows is supposed to be, you know, so complex and just brain-bendingly difficult, but we're here to make it make sense.
Well, it is fascinating how Kant, even way back then, writing in 1781, was wrestling with these questions that are still so relevant. You know, how do we even know what we know? What are the boundaries of human understanding? You know, and is there a reality beyond what our senses can even perceive?
It's like he was peering into the core of how we think.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
So, I mean, just to...
Totally.
It always starts off with, we're going to go on a deep dive.
Yeah.
So the first, both of the ones that you've played.
Here we have two examples then. I think listeners, if they haven't heard this, you get the idea. No matter if you're talking physics or philosophy or anything else, it's going to be the same man, the same woman with the chirpy NPR style of speech, going on a deep dive, asking each other questions and doing these explanations. As I said, impressive technical achievement, but we can talk about what it may mean for extruded talk podcast content. But I wanted to play this next one, which was someone inputted the Wikipedia entry for WFMU.
Yeah, this was put together by Roger from Double Dip Recess.
And as I understand it, were there any other sources?
I believe there must have been other sources.
Okay.
I'm not positive, but I think he did use more than one source.
Okay, so a source or sources talking about WFMU And here's what they came back with on Notebook LM.
Ever come across a radio station and it's like, whoa, this is different.
Different good.
Different good. Like perfectly weirdly you. That's WFMU for ya.
And that's what we're diving into today.
Right. Using their Wikipedia page and their own website as like our roadmap.
And that's what I find so cool. You've got the neutral overview and then bam, WFMU's personality takes over.
Total contrast. So Wiki lays it out. Broadcasting from Jersey City, 91.1 FM, hitting that New York metro area, even beyond. But here's the thing.
Hitting a nerve, you mean?
Exactly. They're listener supported. No corporate overlords, just pure passion.
Which is everything for a station like WFMU.
Yeah.
That's how they pull off this free form format, which, let's be real, is more than just randomized tracks.
Right, but way more.
It's sonic exploration.
Yeah.
DJs with deep musical knowledge, unearthing gems you'd never find on your own.
Their website oozes that energy, man. Experimentation, spontaneity, humor, it's the whole package.
Because it's not just about the music. It's the experience, the vibe.
100%.
In a world of algorithms and curated playlists, WFMU is raw, it's real, it's an antidote.
And the accolades, man, they're not messing around. Best radio station from Rolling Stone, The Village Voice, CMJ, they've got a wall full, probably.
Well, for sure. But it's more than just trophies and titles, right? It's
the for sure, Ken. 100%. Totally. It's the same.
Oh, God.
Okay, I just have one more. Sorry to torture you, but I have one more. And here's what I did. I thought this would be along the lines of the WFMU one. I took the single-page Tectonic website at tectonic.fm. I turned it into a PDF, and I used that as the single source for this next quote-unquote podcast. So I didn't point them to anything else. And tectonic.fm, you know, Ken, it has a very short description, like two sentences of the show, and then it's just hundreds of show titles. Who was the guest and what was the book title or what was the topic of conversation? And that's it. That's it for the entire page. And I want to play you what these hosts came back with to describe Tectonic. Again, this is Google Notebook LM. Reacting to the tectonic.fm single page website.
All right, so we're diving deep today into the world of Tectonic with Mark Hurst.
Okay.
This radio show has been going on for quite a while now,
yeah.
Exploring how our world is shifting to a more digital future.
Mm-hmm.
And you've given us a really interesting collection of episodes to go through.
Right.
Spanning from 2018 all the way to 2024.
Yeah.
And I think one of the first things that struck me when I saw this list was just how many episodes there are.
The volume, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot there.
Which tells us there's a whole community out there who's been following and engaging.
For years.
Yeah. For years with these conversations. And the range of topics is really impressive.
Yeah. It really is.
You've got AI, surveillance, antitrust issues, the impact of technology on society.
Like you said, it's impressive.
Yeah, it's a real smorgasbord.
It is.
Of tech-related discussion.
All right.
Well,
that's
man, they're
that.
Really good at padding. You can tell that they had very little information to go on, but they had to talk.
Totally. Totally. 100%, Ken.
I liked in the WFMU one how the robot says, let's get real.
Let's
be real.
Let's be real right now, Ken. We're synthetic AI voices. All right.
A couple of things about Notebook LM. Yeah. I spoke to a high school student recently who told me that it's become a very popular tool for students to summarize long reading assignments. And they're not going for the text summary. They're going for the podcast summary.
So that they can listen while they're on the bus or coming home from school or something.
Or whatever. It's a better way for them to absorb it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And another thing is after I heard the FMU one a couple of months ago, I was so horrified, especially by the NPR style of it, that I decided I wanted to see what would happen if I put in a really horribly depressing topic.
Oh, yeah.
So I went and I input some source material about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And I was expecting that it was going to come out all chirpy and totally and oozing enthusiasm.
Right.
And let's go on a deep dive about the Holocaust.
Right.
But no, it totally adjusted the tone. And the Holocaust podcast that Notebook LM came back with was very serious and solemn. And it wasn't at all the same upbeat, chirpy NPR tone that all these other ones have had.
So there is a setting in there for tone. Who knows how it's able to modulate. All right, so we've covered Notebook LM. We have about 15 minutes left, Kenneth. I wanted to make sure that we maybe we end on this bit, which is our very own Henry Loengard, Web Hamster Henry himself, has created some AI-generated music. Do you want to cue this up? Because we both like what he's done.
He has a character or an entity called Large Language that I think has a whole bunch of stuff on Bandcamp. And he was playing around with Joe Frank-like monologues, I believe. He was using AI to sort of create Joe Frank-like monologues. And then he took the text that was generated by AI based on Joe Frankisms. Joe Frank's a radio monologist. So he took the text and then he turned that into audio using, I can't remember what tool it was, but he used a tool to turn the text into spoken language. And then he used one of these musical AI programs, he used Suno then to turn it into music, and what came out, and it just kind of did take on a life of its own, according to Henry. What comes out is kind of like Scandinavian children's TV show music, sort of like Christmassy. But what's really amazing about it is that it's not in any language at all.
Right.
It's not in English. It sounds American.
Well, there's a couple of English words that pop out, but it's
or things that sound English.
Yeah.
But it's not any. It's not any language.
Right.
It's not any language at all, and yet it's still so recognizable. You'd think that this is like some children's Christmas TV special from Oslo or something like that.
All right, so we're going to hear this song called "The Momus" from Menejiga Thistle, and that's Menejiga is probably a word that was made by the same AI that came out with a fake Latin in that UCLA textbook. I have no idea what it means. Anyway, here it is, this remotely Scandinavian sounding AI generated song from Large Language. Here it is.
Yes, today unto hot toys. Out came bound, open date. Now, Merez, the mole was from Nejiga Thistle, a cloud hang Kelly twinked his eyes. But now, take grand happened, and the sun
a little too bright in the river's go.
I went to with a serenese tell.
Let's go to sing, Madam Archibald!
Sing, come and us go. Sing, sing, sing.
Hey, Tabby! Not ring, the frames above the green, the colors and the rhythm sing this whole dumb ching tea, the navel time stick, or just a tank of tin, the alcohol and an alcohol and bring all to death.
Oh, we ran tea, song and sound and song and sound and good seas of sing, sing, sing. The fields of joy down town me, and I will ask him and girl to ring.
House full, but just a 10 to 10. We unkin and an oakin and bring out if again. To be set to bit, I'll need a wide and clack. We played as one and down and looking for a peck.
Oh, we man, tease, sorry, sound, and song, and sound, and good seas of sing, sing, sing. The wheels of joy now tell me, and I won't ask me, man, now to me.
The toll close sound, the dirt just take a glow. Now like I'm seeing one a little towering show. The health's all woe, and rookers with your cup. A call of summon on him till this rope and chink.
Oh, we man, cheese, song is sound, and song, and sound, and good seas are sing, sing, sing. Of the old song, joy now tell me, and I won't ask me, man, now to me.
Ooh.
I went to free for serving his goal. Let's expect to see him down the crown to go.
Sing, 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 soft and white to brown. Sing, sing, sing. Oh, ring all sings and so cats up once more round row. Sing, 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 sing. I'll be out of town to you now, darling. All the whole last thing, oh, go, Tommy.
And your coast song, the belt is so the blow. My lock and singing, mama wrote the call and shout. The whole sound wrong, never the said he clumped. But cry the sound of marins in this one known dream.
All he mugs in sends all cats up and star round cross. Sing, 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 sing. I'll be out down, going down, down with all the whole last speed of God.
For seven is gold. The melt the sun of Mulder Charles.
And
sing, sing, sing.
Sing, sing, sing. I did get that word. So that was one where, again, Henry had some human input to the process. He was guiding it and shaping it, right?
I don't know that guiding it is the right word.
Okay.
It didn't sound like from what he wrote that he was really guiding it in any particular direction. But yes, he was massaging what he had. He was taking AI content from one platform and then feeding it into another platform and then taking the result of that and feeding it into a third AI platform. And this is what came out.
I guess what I'm getting at is the question that we've been building up to in this conversation, Ken, is what is the difference between AI-generated audio that we like or we value in some way versus what we immediately want to turn off and are totally opposed to? Because there's a kind of a weird attraction to the moments from Meninjago.
That was great. I loved it. I love that.
So what's the difference?
I don't know what the difference is.
Well, Ken, we're relying on you to tell me, because we're headed into a year where this uncanniness, whether it's uncanny on the side of attraction or revulsion, is going to be everywhere.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, one thing I will say about that song that we just heard that made it much less offensive than many of the other things that we've heard is that it had no meaning.
Yeah.
There was no actual language in it. It was all nonsense language. So there wasn't the angle of there wasn't that uncanny valley that we got from so many of the other things of robots saying things like, let's be real, like
right,
oozing enthusiasm, 100%. So you don't have that smarminess
right
of robots saying things like that. So that's one of the reasons why I liked that. And the fact that it was a nonsense language,
yeah,
but kind of sounded like different things that were somewhat familiar. Like there was that flute sounding thing in the background, which it sounded like a mellotron flute. And somebody on the chat board mentioned another song that was human created by a huge Italian TV star named Adriano Celentano, called Prison Colon Ensanine Cusol, which was a song that he did for a TV show in Italy that was intended to sound like an American song, like what American English sounds like to Italian speakers.
That's right. I remember that song.
Yeah. So this was very similar to that, because you're listening to it and you think like you're almost hearing English.
That's right.
But not quite.
Not quite.
Yeah, so that's one of the factors that made me like that as opposed to hate it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, that if it's not pretending to be human, not pretending to be something it's not, you know, like the AI hosts are pretending to be humans with the and the like and the totally, it reminds me whenever I call a customer service line, you've talked about in this conversation, not knowing whether an agent is human or AI. But when I know it's AI, it's like when you first call the 1-800 line and the chirpy voice comes on and says, tell me what your calling about today?
Right.
And a couple of words. And then I lean on the zero button. I just dot, 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 dot.
Right.
And then I wait a few seconds, and then the AI comes back and says, I don't think I understood what that was. And it's just trying to be, again, chatty and this smarminess. It really is irritating.
And it's just a basic dishonesty.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is. It's dishonest.
And scamminess.
Yeah.
And when it's nonsense like that, there's no dishonesty or scamminess.
No, it's no pretense. This is absurd fun, and we're going to have fun with it.
Right.
But then you get to the cases like Queen plays the Beatles, where it's just so... It's so dumb.
Yeah, well, there are lots of humans doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the humans who are doing that are just so much better than anything that AI is creating. And the same, somebody brought up mashups that a lot of these things are kind of, akin to mashups. But mashups obviously are, combining two or more songs into a single song. Obviously, that's generally... these days, very technology-driven. People are using all sorts of programs to create these mashups, and yet there's still a human feel and a human touch and a human sense of humor to those that's completely missing from the AI equivalents.
Yep. Not long ago on Tectonic, I interviewed John Lydecker, also known as Wobbly, from Negative Land, a band that you've loved for decades now.
Yeah.
And there's a group of human beings who use samples and the act of collage to create these incredible musical compositions, or whether they're musical, but they're audio compositions, and that's got artistic legitimacy behind it. That's different from an AI just sourcing a bunch of sound files and using an algorithm to throw them together. An AI is never going to do what Negative Land does, in other words.
It would be interesting to see what an AI came up with if you instructed an AI to imitate Negative Land.
That's true.
It would be interesting to see if we could tell it apart.
Well, that'd be an interesting experiment.
Yeah.
We've got to bring Wobbly back, and maybe Wobbly himself would like to try that on air. Well, Ken, we just have a minute or two left. Is there anything you want to leave us with, some parting words of wisdom until the next time you're on the show, about how we should guard against bad AI-generated musical extruded product in our lives?
I don't know how you guard against it.
And embrace the good.
Except to tune it out. I'm just hoping that there's going to be an AI jumping the shark moment this year. I'm hoping that there's going to be some kind of calamity or event that's going to make people wake up about AI and realize that it's fine for some things, but it's not fine for everything.
Exactly. That's what I've been waiting for as well. And that's well said. AI is fine for some things. We didn't get into the environmental impact, of course. So I would just put a caveat. Even when AI is fine for some things, we still have to consider, is this worth using all of the water and energy for in the data center to get whatever this is going to be? And again, it's a question of what's being normalized. Hopefully people wake up to the environmental costs as well of this technology. But even so, there's a role for AI, I think a limited role, in the future, but it's way overblown today.
Yeah.
We need a correction, a massive correction.
But I think we're also heading towards another crypto correction, perhaps, because Trump is so into crypto that it can't help but go anywhere except for fraud.
Well, we'll see, Ken. It's going to be very hard to predict the future, but...
Hey, NFTs crashed and burned. NFTs,
they did.
There's no more pretense about NFTs.
That's true. That's true. The truth will out at some point. I don't know how long it'll take. Ken, thank you so much for joining me to kick off this year.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a great tradition to start the year off here on Tectonic.
Great, and looking forward to your next fill-in guest host episode, whenever that is. Friends, that's about all the time I have for this evening. I want to remind you, you are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I want you to stay tuned for Dave Mandel. And I have some homework for you for next time. I want you to avoid Amazon. Let me try that again. Avoid Apple. Abandon Amazon. Forget Facebook. And whatever you do, get off Google. Have a great week, everybody, and see you next time.
And good evening, music lovers and haters. Welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music coming to you from the studio, WFMU studios here in Jersey City, New Jersey. I'm your host, Dave Mandel, here bringing this fantastic music to you every Monday evening. Thanks for tuning in. And we're going to start tonight's show with a couple of cover versions. It's funny because I was thinking earlier this week or late last week, whenever it was, that one of these days I'd like to do an all cover version show. I don't have one ready. I don't have one prepared for you right now, mind you, but I'd like to do it at some point. Lo and behold, two cover versions. What are the odds? Two cover versions of the same Pink Floyd song sort of crossed my field of vision. And that song is Cirrus Minor, a song from the very underrated, I would say, Pink Floyd album More, soundtrack to the film More, came out in 1969. Is it a Prague album? Not really. It's the album right before Amagama, when they really did go sort of full Prague, but this is kind of on the edge. It's a weird album. Is that good enough? But it's a good album, and it has you know, sort of prog folk kind of elements. It's a very folky album. Anyway, Cirrus Minor was the opening track on that Pink Floyd album More, and I'm going to play now two cover versions of that tune that I really like. The first one is going to be by a group called Terrapin, who are German. They actually did two versions, if you can believe it, of Cirrus Minor. We're going to hear one of those two, the more the more proggy version, the more spacey version. And following that, we're going to hear Etienne Dahau, who also brings you a cover version of the same track, Cirrus Minor. Coincidentally, right around the same time, just I had sort of cover versions on my mind, this other thing also kind of fell into my lap. So I'll play that. I'm going to play three tunes. Now, the third one, I'm not going to damn it with faint praise. I'm going to sort of damn it. It's a cover version. I'm playing it because it's kind of an oddity that I'd never known about. And it is a cover version of the Jethro Tull song, Living in the Past, performed by Keith Emerson and a bunch of other celebrities, like John Wetton, I think, a bunch of other really, actually a few ex-Jethro Tull members but sort of celebrity cast. And it's bad. It's not great. Okay, I'm really sorry. I'm sort of obligated to play it, but I'm putting a warning label on the packet here. Okay, so anyway, we're going to hear two cover versions of the Pink Floyd song Cirrus Minor, followed by a cover version of Living in the Past performed by Keith Emerson.
churchyard by a river, lazing in the haze of midday, bluffing in the grasses and the graves.